these words. He said, "My mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All I am, I owe to my mother." And think about what this means in terms of what he accomplished. "I attribute all my success in life to the moral, intellectual, and physical education I received from her." Truly, Mrs. Washington was a mother who shaped the course of our nation. And today we'll be looking at a different nation and a different mother that shaped the course. Of course, it's the nation of Israel from the Old Testament. And the man was Samuel. We don't talk about Samuel a lot. It's interesting as I got to think about Samuel and how he's really a giant of the Old Testament. The first thing that came to my mind was that Samuel is one of three people who has at least two books of the Bible named for him. Timothy, 1st and 2nd Timothy. John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and then I guess the Gospel of John. And then Samuel. 1st and 2nd Kings were not really named for Bob Kings. It was named for a series of kings. And so 1st and 2nd Samuel really records, and not only is he, you know, the books named for him, but it's at the critical time when Israel's actually becoming a nation. It had been a family. It had been at this time when we'll read the very beginning of Samuel's life, it's still kind of a loose federation of tribes. If you remember when our country was a confederacy, well, you won't remember, but you read about it in your books. Most of you won't remember. We were kind of a mess. We were just a bunch of different states all doing their own thing. And there was a time during the time of Judges when not only did every man do what was right, but also every tribe and every family. And there really wasn't much. And because of that, because they're so disunified, they're constantly defeated. Constantly defeated. And a lot of times the bad guys were the Philistines. But the Philistines were a unified kingdom. And they had a tremendous advantage over this disorganized, ragtag bunch of different tribes of the nation of Israel. At the end of Samuel's life, this is the transition. At the end of Samuel's life, Israel is the world power. It's a national power. It's at least the whole area is under the influence of King David. And so there's this tremendous change that goes on that's because of the spiritual strength and wisdom that Samuel provides as the bridge between the time of the judges and the time of the kingdom. Samuel anointed the first two kings, Saul and David. And today we're going to look at the woman behind the man, Samuel's mother. And so if you want to read along with me, you can. I'm in 1 Samuel 1. Reading from the New Living. This story happened 3,000 years ago, so a couple points I may kind of bring out a few facts to help us understand the context. 1 Samuel 1. There was a man named Elkanah, who lived in Ramah, the hill country of Ephraim. And so we're talking about one of these tribes, Ephraim, and the little locality they were. And he was the son of one man and the grandson of another man from the family of so-and-so and the clan of Zeph. And he had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Now, Peninnah had children while Hannah did not, which is a major focus of this story. Each year, as the law required, Elkanah and his wife would travel to Shiloh, where the tabernacle that they'd built during the time of Exodus, it was housed at Shiloh. And so they went there to worship and sacrifice to the Lord. All the Israelites had to go there three times a year, and Elkanah was a good Israelite. The priests of the Lord at that time were the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas. And one day Elkanah presented his sacrifice. Well, he'd give portions of the sacrifice to Peninnah and each of the children. So it was a party. You sacrificed to the Lord, but you also had this celebration of God's presence through a party for your family. And he would give portions of the sacrifice to Peninnah, each of her children, but he gave Hannah a special portion because he loved her very much, even though the Lord had given her no children. But Hanani made fun of Hannah because the Lord had closed her womb. Year after year, it was the same. Year after year, it was the same. Hanani would taunt Hannah as they went up to the tabernacle, and Hannah would finally be reduced to tears and would not even eat, even though that choicest part was given to her. "What's the matter, Hannah?" clueless, Elkanah would ask. Typical man. "Why aren't you eating? Why aren't you sad because you have no children? You have me. Isn't that better than 10 sons? Well, one day when they were at Shiloh, Hannah went over to the tabernacle after the supper time to pray to the Lord. Eli the priest was sitting at his customary place beside the entrance. Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly. She prayed to the Lord. And she made this vow. "O Lord Almighty, if you would look down upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you, and he will be yours for an entire lifetime, a sign that he's dedicated to the Lord, and his hair will never be cut." And as she was praying to the Lord, Eli watched her, and he could see that her lips were moving but heard no sound, and he thought she had been drinking. "Must you come here drunk?" he demanded. "Throw away your wine." "Oh, no, sir," she said. "I'm not drunk, but I am very sad, and I was pouring out my heart to the Lord. Please don't think I'm a wicked woman, for I've been praying out of great anguish and sorrow." "Well, in that case," Eli said, "cheer up, and may the God of Israel grant the request you have asked of him." "Oh, thank you, sir," she exclaimed. And then she went back, and then she began to eat again, and she was no longer sad. The entire family got up early the next morning. They went to worship the Lord once more, and then they returned home to Ramah. When Elkanah slept with Hannah next, the Lord remembered her request, and in due time she gave birth to a son. And she named him Samuel, for she said, "I've asked the Lord for him." Uses the same vowels, and so it's very much like "I asked of the Lord." And the next year, Elkanah, Peninnah, and their children went on their annual trip to make their sacrifice to the Lord. But Hannah did not go. She told her husband, "Wait until the baby is weaned, be 2 or 3 years old, and then I will take him to the tabernacle and leave him there with the Lord permanently." "Whatever you think is best," Elkanah agreed. "Stay here for now, and may the Lord help you keep your promise." And so she stayed home and nursed the baby. When the child was weaned, Hannah did take him up to the tabernacle at Shiloh, and they brought along a 3-year-old bull for the sacrifice and also a half bushel of flour and some wine. And after sacrificing the bull, they took the child to Eli. "Sir," she said, "do you remember me? I am the woman who stood here several years ago praying to the Lord. I asked the Lord to give me this child, and he has given me my request. Now I am giving him to the Lord, and he will belong to the Lord his whole life." And they worshiped the Lord there. Last week we looked just for a moment at the fruit of the Spirit. We talked mostly not about what the fruit were, but the basic operating procedure, the way that we allow God to produce those fruit in us, because we'll never be able to do it on our own without his help. And this morning we get to look at Hannah, and we'll see that she's producing some of those fruit that are mentioned in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. And she does it by the basic operating procedure of allowing God to do his perfect work in her life. First, we see that Hannah was gentle with her family. One of the fruit of the Spirit from Galatians 5 is gentleness. A lot of ways of looking at gentleness, and a lot of people have defined it in different ways, but basically, it boils down to treating people better than they deserve. When someone's just treating you miserably, rather than treating them miserably in return, you treat them better than what they deserved. And she lived up to this. She had this problem with what all the commentators call the rival wife. And the fact of the matter is every time the Bible records more than one wife for a husband, there's always problems going to happen. And so it was here. Peninnah was able to bear children, but Hannah didn't. In today's world, that wouldn't mean a whole lot, probably, but in that world, 3,000 years ago, a wife's only job, really, a wife's reason for existence was to bear children, especially male children, that would be the heir and carry on the name and the lineage and the responsibility for caring for the family. And for some reason, actually the text says it was God's reason, God's purpose, Hannah at this point had not been able to bear children. And every time she saw Peninnah's children at the kitchen table, she was reminded that she didn't have her own children. Every time Elkanah talked about taking the boys out and teaching them how to hunt and how to fish, she was reminded that she wasn't fulfilling her responsibility. And certainly, every time, which apparently was pretty frequent, that Peninnah teased her about her physical inadequacy, or however she put it. A lot crueler than that, I'm sure. How do you respond when someone who knows exactly where your most vulnerable point is, they take a knife and they stick it in and they twist it? How do you respond to that person? How do you treat them? Hannah experienced gentleness. God gave her a level of gentleness. She could have found some way to get back, you know? Well, at least I'm not ugly like you, you know? Or, you know, my problem can be fixed, but intelligence can't. She didn't demand that her husband get rid of the rival wife. She didn't nag at him. She didn't leave the family. We find the story of Hagar and Sarah and the rivalry that they had. And Hagar is often trying to sneak away because she just can't take the pressure, and so she wants to get out of the point of pressure. Hannah had the ability to stay there in the midst of that and still treat other people charitably. She bore gently the pain, and she persistently prayed for relief. That's gentleness. It's being stronger than the people that attack you rather than sinking to their level. It's resisting the urge to take your pain and to dump it on someone else. I read definition of a mother. It says, a mother is that person who, when she sees that there's four pieces of pie but five people, declares, oh, I never really liked pie anyway. It's gentleness, being willing to accept the responsibility of putting up with people and putting up with situations that are not the world's best. So she was gentle. She was also patient, persevering in her prayers. This was her secret for how she could be gentle, is apparently she spent a lot of time pouring out her anguish. And I just love that, you know, I'm a person of great anguish, and twice it talks about anguish that she had. And so she was praying to the Lord, verse 10. And we're told one particular time that she prayed this way, but we can assume that this was a pretty frequent prayer. If you pray something and you don't get the result you want the first time, don't give up. Just keep praying. If God has laid it on your heart and it's a godly thing, it seems to be in tune with Scripture, keep at it. And she did. She kept at it. I think of Matthew 7. It says, ask and you shall receive. But the literal words that are there are actually, keep on asking, keep on looking, keep on knocking, keep on seeking. And she kept on praying. Verse 11 says she was specific with her prayer. She wasn't just praying for some solution or even some kind of child. She was praying for a son, and praying for a son that would have the spiritual sensitivity that he would be worth something to God in full-time service in the temple. She was pretty specific. But once again, it's interesting that she prayed specifically. She said, God, give me a son. God, give me a son that I can give back to you in the temple. But you notice she did not say when. Wisely, she did not give God a timetable, because she had learned the fruit of the Spirit. God had worked that in her life of patience. She was perseverant. She'd keep looking for God's answer, but she was patient. She wouldn't demand that he provide that right now. And then Hannah was faithful in her promises. Faithfulness, one of the fruit of the Spirit from Galatians 5. faithfulness is probably one of the rarer things today that we have. There's, even among non-Christians, there's a lot of people who find a way to love and be altruistic, and they'll go down to Haiti, and which is wonderful, and they should. And there's joy, and there's a few people who have peace. But faithfulness is a very, very rare commodity today. Faithfulness is that trait that when you make a promise to someone, you expect it's going to cost you something. And you're committing to pay whatever cost it is. It's very different from today's world, where when we make a promise, I make a promise to you because I want something from you. But the very first time it's inconvenient for me to fulfill my part, I say, oh, I can't do that because, and you give the reason. Faithfulness says, I found out that's going to cost me to fulfill my promise to you. I didn't know the cost, but when I made the promise, when I shook your hand, when I gave my word, I knew there would be a cost, and at that time I had committed to pay whatever the cost was. Hannah was faithful in her promise. Verse 23 is an interesting thing that kind of opens this up a little bit. So she promised to God, if you give me a son, I will give him back to you. And then all of a sudden the son shows up. And in today's world, she would have all sorts of reasons not to fulfill her promise. She says, I didn't know it was such a beautiful son. Or I didn't know that the left knee would be a little wobbly. Or I didn't know it was so far away to Shiloh. I mean, all sorts of excuses. And a lot of them, all of her friends would say, yeah, that's a good excuse for reneging on your promise to God. But look at her godly husband. She says, I'm going to stay 1 or 2 years, wean him first. Elkanah says, whatever you think is best, stay here for now, but may the Lord help you keep your promise. Accountability to be faithful. And I think she was faithful anyway, but it's a marvelous thing to be in a fellowship, in a community, whether it's a church, a family, or a close friendship, to say, you know, I remember you making the promise to that person, to the Lord, to the church, to your employer, and I'm going to remind you gently from time to time, may the Lord help you be faithful. It's a tremendous thing, and it is a shining example in the darkness of the world around us, where people make promises to get something, but never with the expectation that they will fulfill it at cost to themselves. Elkanah said, may the Lord help you keep your promise, which number one says, we fulfill our promises at great cost only because we experience God's grace coming into our life. It is hard. There's hardly a promise you make that won't be at some time hard to keep if it's a worthwhile, significant promise. We fulfill meaningful promises only with God's help, but God's help is there. And then secondly, we do need people to hold us accountable in that process. And she had both, God's help and her husband's accountability. But as far as mothering goes, what an incredible thing for Samuel. What an incredible thing for the power of his life and for the strength and for the impact he would have for the history of the kingdom. Starting off with this example of a person who knew what faithfulness was like. For Samuel to have security, because security from our children comes from they knowing that when you give them your word, it will happen. The world is very uncertain. Things change. Things changed a lot during Samuel's life, and things will change a lot during your children's life. But there is a sense of stability saying, when that person, especially if it's your parent, when that person gives their word, I know it will come to pass. Once again, I found out this week that I really can't count on the stock market to provide the kind of retirement I thought I might have sometime in the distant future. Not in this situation, but in other situations, I found that I can't always count on employers to fulfill the promises that they've made to me. Certainly, in the last month, we learned that we really can't count on the weather. But I'll tell you, I've always known I could count on my parents' word. That when they said something, when they said they would do something, I knew that they would perform it. And there is a sense of stability and the confidence to my life. And there is a sense in which I believe that God is faithful because my dad was faithful. And because my mom was faithful. Not always because it was easy or it looked natural, but because it said, we gave our word. And this is the price we're paying to fulfill the word that we gave. That's a question. Are you giving your kids confidence in God's faithfulness? Because when you give your word, you follow it through. Hannah was faithful in her promises. It's a fruit of the Spirit. It comes by the power of the Spirit. And then her basic operating procedure, this whole prayer thing, in the middle of the story, prayer, 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 anguish. In fact, she had a prayer life that even the priest couldn't understand. I mean, that's putting it in pretty simple terms. But her prayer life was so deep, even the priest didn't understand that. That wasn't a one-time thing. That was a characteristic of her life that flowed out at one particular time. And look at the prayer that she asked for. A wonderful prayer. She said, God, if you'd give me a son, I will give you a lifelong worker. And so it's a win-win situation. I win the son, you win a worker. Sam is both cat and dog theology. It's both cat and theology. It's cat theology to say, it's all about me. I need a son. But then she said, well, it's also all about God and God's glory, because I'm going to prove, number one, my faithfulness, number one, two, God is faithful, and I'm going to give God this incredible worker, which she did. A person that knew how to pray. That verse 23, when Elkanah says, you know, may the Lord help you fulfill the promise, reminds us that here's a woman that knew that if she was going to do something of significance, it'd only be done in dependence upon the Lord's power. She wouldn't be able to do it on her own. She wouldn't produce fruit, and certainly wouldn't produce a child without God's help. How could Hannah put up with all those years of teasing by the other wife? It was because she looked to God for gentleness. How could Hannah put up with all the years of frustration? I mean, it wasn't just the other people calling her barren. She felt that herself. How could she put up with that? Because she looked to God for patience. And how could she give up that gift that she had waited so many years for and do it almost like it's the natural thing, so unnatural? How could she do that? Because she looked to God for faithfulness. Samuel really is a spiritual giant. Because we're organizing the more political things, we think, you know, King David and everything. But Samuel was the man that made King David possible. Samuel's a spiritual giant, towering over the Old Testament, probably only two or three other names that had the influence in God's people greater than Samuel. But he was a spiritual giant because he was raised by a spiritual giant. A mother that modeled the New Testament fruit of the Spirit. She was gracious, she was persevering, she was faithful. But more than what she was, there was that basic operating procedure of saying that I know I can do this because God's working in my life. Well, maybe you're not a mother. Maybe you're not even a woman. I can tell some of you are not. But you can have a gigantic influence on the people around you, whether they're children or co-workers or friends, a gigantic spiritual impact. Pretty much the same way that Hannah did, starting with prayer, with dependence and counting and expecting that God will take care of us. Persevering in your requests, looking for God to produce his fruit in you. And yes, I know there's different ways of using that in this story, but there are different ways and all sorts of ways of it being true that God will produce wonderful results in our life as we depend upon him. So we pray, we produce, and then, here's the key, we teach others to do the same. We teach them to be dependent. We teach them the life of prayer. We teach them to believe that God will do far more in their life when he's given the chance than they can do on their own. And that is where I will stop, because I believe that old Spanish proverb that says, you know, an ounce of mother is worth a pound of preaching. I will say, though, at the end of the service that I've arranged with the elders to provide a beautiful red rose for all the women, mothers and just all women. We have more than enough, and it's our gift. We just